Chapter 5. When Meadows Wither. I suppose this all raises a question. Where were Riley and Seandra? Seandra had her hands full. Experienced staff were leaving. There was the new building. She couldn't micromanage everything. Riley was training to become a teacher and had her job in Meadows. Sometimes we'd work together when Susan and Karen weren't available. At the end of the last academic year, they left. Seandra retired. Riley took on her teaching course. Not only that, White Mountain's headmistress moved schools, too. Gemma, the deputy head, had temporarily taken her position. Almost all of the people who had previously made up my school life were absent, and I was left with Susan and Karen. On the bright side, Matthew ended his primary schooling. Therefore, there was no reason to antagonise Henry anymore. I even apologised for the year before and befriended him. We had something in common after all. They often locked us in the sensory room. Without Seandra, the Senko looked to Susan, who advocated for the sensory room. This left staff with a dilemma. If two children were misbehaving, one would have to leave the sensory room. Susan solved this by finding the most seldom used rooms with the least people around. She practically converted certain parts of the school into makeshift dungeons. More time in tiny rooms meant less time in class. I tried to learn the violin. Susan would hold my head and obstruct the playing position I found comfortable. In my dad's words, it was like she had a noose around you. It wasn't just my body they held hostage. In the first few weeks of term, I bought in the book Holes by Louis Sacker. If I was on best behaviour, Susan permitted 15 minutes of reading time. If I weren't, she'd hide the book. I never brought in another after I finished with it. I feared she would steal them. In class, I'd have daydreams. All of them were about Susan and Karen repeatedly dying in grotesque ways. With visions of murder in my mind, I often tried acting on them. I'd lunge for Susan, bringing the lesson to a halt. Soon after, I'd be in the sensory room, sobbing myself dry. I wanted a return to the distant days of Meadows. But in Seandra's replacement, all I saw was a woman who browsed the internet and devoured cheeseburgers. Meadows had withered, a shell of its former self. I didn't want to accept that, but I had to.
"Midget," a boy jabbed.
A stab of horror rocked my chest, pulled from my daydream, back into the concrete and rain. He bounced the ball upwards. I threw my hands in front of my face.
"What's the matter? Don't you like balls? And how come you're so short? You look like a baby."
Fuck off. A great tremor of tears overwhelmed me, some escaping as I closed my eyes. Footsteps running. When I peered out, he had fled. Other children were rushing over, pointing me out to Susan.
"He's crying," one child remarked.
"Are you okay?" asked another.
"I'll take it from here," said Susan. "Come on, Grotty, let's go."
I didn't resist. She led me to the sensory room. I didn't want to leave. The tremors shook me to my core. Thoughts of murder, killing the boy in front of his parents. I couldn't escape them. I wanted to hurt him. I needed to hurt him. Lunchtime, he was in front of me in the queue. Revenge. I grabbed a cutlery knife, stabbing him through his jumper. His face went ghost white, eyes fading.
"No!"
Susan roared. Veins frozen, I pointed the knife at her chest. Jaw clenched, she squeezed my arm. The knife crashed to the floor with a clang. Everyone gaped, then more staff arrived. Soon they threw me in the sensory room. I was excluded for 3 days.
"I have students and staff wondering why he's still here," Gemma told Mum.
In her position as acting head, she'd recommended sending me to an out-of-borough correctional unit. From what I've been told, Susan supported the idea. A sympathetic ear in the local authority stood up for me. Without her, they'd have sent me away from my family. I got lucky that time. The bell blared off as usual, but I remained where I was, face pressed against the wall, concealing my tears.
"Oi, Grotty, time to go outside," Susan ordered.
Head bowed, I plodded toward the gate.
"You're not going anywhere."
She grasped my shoulders. I didn't resist.
"Do you want the sensory room?"
"No, I want to kill myself."
Her eyes narrowed. She pulled me over to a bench.
"Max, that makes me very sad."
I pointed to a nearby puddle.
"I want to drown myself, but there isn't enough water."
"Why do you want to kill yourself? I don't understand."
"I want to kill myself. I want to kill myself,"
I repeated. The school caretaker walked past. "Are you feeling sad, Max?"
"Yes, I want to kill myself."
I stood up, but Susan wrestled me into her arms, squeezing tightly.
"If I kill myself, I can't come back. Do you get that?"
"You're a special boy, Max,"
she consoled. Dad held me in the car as earth-shattering sobs tore through my chest.
"There were two girls," I began. "The big one hit me with a broom. They said they'd take me to a children's home."
Of course, nobody had hit me with a broom. A series of cascading events was what had caused my breakdown. But, unable to find words at that age to explain my predicament, I conjured a fake story. Later in the term, Susan compelled me to attend a residential trip, telling me I'd have to go to the sensory room if I refused. There was watery hot chocolate and sharing a room with six noisy boys, as well as peer activities I wouldn't normally dream of doing. On the second day at 5 a.m, I sneaked out of the boys' dorm and stole a teacher's phone.
"Help! I'm in prison!"
I screamed, calling my parents. Soon the teachers had wrestled me to the ground. Susan had me run laps around the fields afterwards, albeit she insisted it was nothing more than occupational therapy. By the time we got back inside, I was a wheezing, snotty mess. Thankfully, my parents had packed me an inhaler. 11th of the 3rd, 2012. A letter addressed from me to Susan. "Look, I'm not having you anymore, so just read what I say to you. I know why you won't harm me when someone else is in the room. Here's why. Because you will be fired by Gemma and become homeless. I know your little act. People may think you're nice, but you're horrible and do not care about anything or anyone. I also think you need to stop hurting my feelings. So just stop and think about others, or you will become like the horrible aunts in James and the Giant Peach. You're mean, but you can change that by stopping all the things you're doing. Okay, I hope you have learnt your lesson. From Max. P.S. No rubbing this out. I won't do work today." Apologies for the atrocious grammar and spelling. I wanted to preserve the letter's authenticity. The events leading up to it don't differ from the cycle I've described so far. But I'll fill in the blanks with what is noteworthy. Karen wanted to undertake teacher training. They replaced her with Cody, who never sent me to the sensory room. If I did all my work, we would play games on his phone together. It lasted for a few months until he left to become a teacher. Zoe replaced him. She made use of the sensory room, but preferred removing my socks and having me stand outside in the rain. Amid it all, my parents met Jenny. Still in university, she'd be with me in the school holidays when they were working. For my birthday the year before, Dad had bought me a computer. It had a disk drive, but no games. Jenny changed that, introducing me to Age of Empires 3. That and later The Settlers, Rise of an Empire were all I played. For the first time, my Lego sat dormant on the shelf. I would fantasize about the battles I had created in the cities I built in the sensory room. Video games were a world where Susan couldn't follow.
When's Jenny coming over?
I must have asked that question 1,000 times. Summer term, we finally got a new headmistress. But she didn't affect my situation for better or worse and was more of a presence than anything else. Outside of school, doctors were concerned about how underweight I was and wanted me on a feeding tube. This possibility caused me to have recurring nightmares. In each one, faceless figures restrained me whilst a metal tube punctured my brain. Mum and Dad fought to their last breath against the treatment and fortunately succeeded. We never stepped into that clinic again.
I've just carried 30, I caterwauled. It's bullshit.
Susan peered up from her phone.
Don't swear, Grotty. Do it yourself. It's a raffle,
I grumbled, storming off. 31.5-litre bottles for the school fair. All of them bigger than me. And now she wanted me to carry another 5? No thanks. She dashed over, propelling me backwards.
It's this or the sensory room?
You're her slave. Kill her. I galloped, throwing a punch. She caught it. We're locked in a struggle of strength.
All your choice, Grotty, she reprimanded. You'll be in the sensory room after home time.
I shrieked in fury, ramming my nails into her arm. Her face turned a pale white, veins peering through.
You're getting stronger, she mused.
Rage-filled red engulfed her face.
But you've made a poor choice.
Zoe jolted toward us, yanking me away.
He's too angry for the sensory room, Susan fumed. Take him to the office.
A brutal, one-sided battle continued. 4 against 1. Even Karen got in on the action. Finally, they forced me into a tiny room with boarded-up windows. I winced, unable to wipe away cascading sweat, clutching strands of Susan's hair in my hands.
He's like a little animal, one of them laughed.
They took it in turns, pressing me to the carpet, my eyes watering as I tasted whatever putrid things lay down there.
Give up,
Susan seethed, grasping my head, a shower of tears, kicking, screaming. All were in vain.
I'm going to kill your fucking family,
I boomed.
In your dreams, Grotty.
I've been waiting ages, Dad fumed. Zoe stood in his way, shielding the ongoing struggle.
However angry he is, I'll handle it. Just let me take him home.
No, he's not ready.
You said that 5 minutes ago.
He pushed past and discovered us. My head fell to the floor with a thud. Glassy-eyed, the TAs glanced at each other. Nobody said a word. Dad picked me up under his arm and took us home.
You're lucky your twit father was there,
Susan remarked the next day.
He spoils you rotten.
We couldn't afford a solicitor. And if my parents wanted to contest a place in their chosen secondary school, they'd need support from White Mountain. I had to survive another year